Hey folks, welcome to the show. We got a great one today. We got Peter here with us, and we're talking indeterminate tomatoes. Welcome to the Row by Row Gardening Show, the best dadgum gardening show on the internet, where we talk about gardening, a little bit of cooking, and growing your own food. Now sit back and enjoy. Hey folks, I'm Greg, and Peter, as I mentioned, is here from Seminus.
Thank you.
And we are lucky enough to have Peter here a couple times a year. And we're talking indeterminate tomatoes because Peter's company owns the garden indeterminate tomato business.
Has for a long time.
Yep. So we are going to maybe debunk some myths, maybe give some good information on how to sucker those tomatoes, how to grow those tomatoes, how to treat them. But first of all, you got to try something right here, Peter.
I think I know what that is.
Yep. This right here is freeze-dried squash.
Your first for me.
Yep. You're going to be blown away. So the wife has been freeze-drying everything.
Wow, the texture of that.
It's neat, ain't it? And it's got pretty good flavor to it.
It's like a puff.
It is. So we have freeze-dried blueberries, squash, you name it, she's done it. But I think this is one of my tops right there in squash. It's got just, it holds the flavor more than some
I think
of
the texture is what's surprising.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like one of those puff chips.
So you can reconstitute this in water and cook it. So this is the way to preserve your food. And
wow.
I think it'll last somewhere 30 years. Now, 30 years is probably going to outdo me.
But might not get me to try it in 30 years.
Has to be blended up as baby food if we eat it 30 years. But I thought you'd find that interesting. It's freeze-dried squash. So last week on our show, we was talking about okra. And in comments, we asked people to put in there the way they would prefer to have their okra. What do you think the winner was?
I would say
boiled, stewed, fried, all of that.
My obvious guess would be fried.
And he was right. Yep. Fried okra was the winner last week.
Have you ever had fried smashed okra?
I have. It's really
good. That's the way I do it.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Okra is a southern thing. It's kind of inching up a little bit where them northerners are starting to catch on our secrets, but we love our fried okra.
Yep. Haven't planted mine yet. I'm close.
Really?
Yep. Next week.
Yep. Cool. I got mine in the ground. I transplanted mine, but I got mine in the ground. So indeterminate tomatoes. Now, to start off with, Peter works for Seminus, and Seminus is the breeder for most of the home garden varieties of indeterminate tomatoes. But not just tomatoes, I mean, what about peppers? Y'all are huge into peppers.
In the commercial side, we're the dominant player in pepper, yeah.
Speaking of peppers,
yep.
You recognize this one?
Yep, I think you know what that is, too. That's Austinator.
Austinator bell pepper there, and it's turning red there. So in case most people didn't understand the color thing with bell pepper, explain that real quick.
Well, obviously, green bell peppers are green first, and then red comes from green.
Right.
So most of the commercial bell peppers you will buy in a grocery store, which we breed for, are bred to turn red really late, and they turn more of a blotchy color. This is not a product that would go into a retail commercial store.
Right.
However, nothing wrong with eating that. So perfectly natural transformation from green to red. We do breed varieties that turn red faster. So Red Knight's one y'all have carried and do carry that is bred to turn red really fast and is designed to be harvested red by commercial packer shippers or home gardeners. So all green bell peppers will turn either red, yellow, or orange eventually if you leave them on the plant. These were taken off the plant last week, I think you said, and they have just turned naturally as they've aged.
But big nice bell pepper. I'm super excited about this Austinator series here. That has got disease resistance as well.
Yes, particularly for the South, has tomato spotted wilt virus resistance, which home gardeners are not going to be able to manage through any process, chemically or rotationally or anything like that. Is spread by thrips, and they move in and out, and they transmit it with almost instantly from the time they feed on the pepper plant. So you're not going to control them. If you get tomato spotted wilt virus in your garden, there's really not much you can do about that plant. You have to discard the plant, throw it away, because it's not going to be productive, particularly in case of peppers. So having the resistance for a southern gardener to spotted wilt resistance is a big plus.
Yeah, I guess this Austinator bell pepper makes a big, pretty bell pepper, but I guess the best way to put it, it's easy to grow.
Easy to grow and reliable.
Yep.
And you don't really, you can take out the concern about investing your time and effort in putting a plant in the ground that's not got tomato spotted wilt virus resistance and then losing the plant.
I got one more we got to talk about real quick if I can get it. Boom, boom. And here we have the Halcinator jalapeno.
Yeah, it's a great, great product.
Yep. Yep, nice one there. It's not extremely hot. Would you call it mid-level hot?
It's kind of mid-tier, yeah. Mid-tier? There's varieties, some older varieties in particular that were known to be really hot. And then there's some genetics in the marketplace now that are known to be very mild.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, there are no heat jalapenos.
Right.
But this would be considered middle of the road.
Yep, and good disease resistance as well.
Great disease resistance, particularly for southern gardens. Yep.
Yep, yep. Easy to grow.
Reliable and
easy to grow. We got the CSP, and that's the Halcinator series there that we're working on. It's been great to be able to bring out these varieties to give people the opportunity to be able to be successful growing peppers. A lot of people struggle with peppers, but with these Halcinator series here, it can be as easy.
Just take some of the risk factors out.
Yep,
that's the goal.
Yep. All right, folks, let's move in real quick before we do. Yellow Dollar watermelon.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite watermelons.
Yep.
And I got it planted this year, and that comes from you guys.
Yep.
The two watermelons I recommend for the home garden is Sangria and Yellow Dollar. I love that Yellow Dollar. It is sweet, sweet, sweet. Man, it's another one that's easy to grow.
Yep. Yep. And it's not new. It's been around a while, but it's that age of it has proven its reliability.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we sell quite a bit through the years, and I think it's getting more popular now as people culinary wise are realizing there's yellow watermelons out there. You're seeing them in grocery stores seedless wise, but you can grow a seeded yellow meat, mm-hmm. yellow doll, for instance, very easily in your home garden.
And it's not a huge watermelon, it's a smaller watermelon, so it works well for being put in the refrigerator.
Yes, yeah, what we call an icebox melon. Yep. That term comes from the fact it was small enough to 10 to 12 pounds, probably maxes out at 10 to 12 pounds.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let's get to the meat of the show. We're talking about tomatoes. Now, we all know tomatoes is the most popular thing grown in the garden because everybody loves a good tomato sandwich. If you don't, you should. You're missing out on life if you've not eaten a good tomato sandwich. One of my favorite things possible to make. You put a tomato sandwich, a good one next to a steak. Hey, I love a good tomato sandwich. And we talk about varieties that's been around for a long time. I think about Rutgers. I think about some of those varieties. But when we think about indeterminates, we think of what? Better Boy,
Big Beef.
So,
you know, those types have been around since the 80s.
So Big Beef has been around since Better Boy has?
Yeah, they were all kind of in the same 4 to 5 year period.
Really? Okay. So I'm going to list out the ones we're going to talk about today real quick. And we're talking about indeterminates. We're going to talk about Better Boy, Big Beef, Purple Boy.
Yep.
Lemon Boy, Pink Delicious, and of course we're going to talk about Sun Sugar a little bit too, because we got to talk about Sun Sugar. All right, so let's talk about the slicers. The slicers first would be your Better Boys, your Big Beef, your Purple Boy, and your Lemon Boy, and I guess your Pink Delicious would fall in there as well.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
And Pink Girl. All right, so these are indeterminate type tomatoes.
Yep.
And they got a little different growth habitat than determinants. We talked about determinants a week or two ago. Let's talk about indeterminates because they take a little bit different care. They have different growth habitat or habit than determinant types. And for you guys that don't know the difference between indeterminate and determinate, you know, one of the best ways to keep up with it and make it simple is you just think about determinants got a determined height. Yep. Indeterminate can go on and grow on. And we're talking about indeterminates. All right, on YouTube, and there's all kind of things on YouTube out there. They talk about pruning tomatoes, a lot of things out there that I don't necessarily agree with. They also talk about pinching them off and leader. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about some best practices on indeterminate slicers, on pruning and maybe pinching off or trellising. What do you call that? Leaders coming off from there?
Yeah.
What's your thoughts?
Well, indeterminates as a general rule are obviously going to grow and keep growing. And what generally happens is you can go one of a couple of routes. A lot of folks you'll hear talk about single leader or single stem pruning. What they're referring to is they're going to take every sucker off the plant as it forms in the node.
Somebody described this as it's the armpit of the plant.
Fair.
But that sucker's going to come right in there. If y'all can see here where I'm pointing here, right in there is where that sucker's going to come out at.
And single leader people will take every sucker out as the plant grows. They end up with a very tall plant, not much foliage. The fruit are very exposed. They're open. And typically where I see people do that is, one, they're visual people. They want to see, you know, they want to see the fruit more than they want to see a plant. Or they're in a small space and they want a tall, narrow plant, which that will provide. You'll have not really any foliage that'll grow outside of the sort of main channel trunk of the plant. Or they are growing so many things in a small space, they want to be able to, you know, visually see it, get around it. And typically it's for people that are higher input people that want to spend more time in the garden, for going out to go out every day to prune tomatoes is something they'd want to do. I don't have that privilege where my garden is. I only get to get in the garden about once or twice a week. So I don't do single leader, but a lot of people do.
Yeah, it's more of a pretty thing.
Yeah, the thing about single leader is it limits your yield potential, because suckers will form flowers, which will form fruit. So by taking all the suckers off the plant, you are limiting the yield potential of the plant. If you're fine with that, that's okay. But that is one of the side effects of pruning all your suckers off, is you don't get yield off suckers.
Mm-hmm. Also, I've seen somebody talk about pinching the top off and have 2 liters, and I'm assuming maybe 2 sucker leaders come out and leaf from that and have 2 liters. Now that may work okay in a high tunnel production, where they trellising them and they're pinning them and they're supporting them all the way to the top. But from a garden situation where you're putting a tomato cage on there, it's not the way to go.
No, it's the common practice, and it's what's done in protected culture or greenhouse tomatoes, hydroponic tomatoes, mm-hmm. That have a grafted rootstock underneath them that implies vigor to both of those laterals or leaders or whatever term you want to call them. That is standard practice in that business. For home gardeners, one, we typically don't graft, and so we don't have the vigor in a rootstock attached to that plant that's going to give it enough vigor to produce both leaders and produce fruit off both leaders. But typically you will delay maturity significantly. And so when we did all of that work back a few years ago, the number one thing we saw happen was you increased maturity, moved maturity out a month or more, because that plant has to recalibrate where it's going, and then you lost fruit size. So for home gardeners, pinching the top out of a tomato does not really make a whole lot of economical sense.
Right. All right, so we threw with the pinching. No pinching out the tops here. Now let's talk about sucker, because this is a controversial subject here. All kind of information out there. Does it increase fruit size? What is best practices on how far up to sucker and indeterminate?
The fruit size question is a little bit variable based on the variety. But as a general rule, the answer is no. Now, intuitively, you think it's yes because, well, you say, well, it's going to put more energy into the fruit. But largely, it is the case that fruit size is more genetically determined. And if the plant has enough resources, it will maximize that fruit size, whether it's been pruned or not. There's a lot of videos online that will point that out, and there's research, obviously, behind that. Now, typically, you do want to prune indeterminates at least high enough to get foliage off the ground, because you want to keep diseases that are soil-borne from splashing up onto the leaves and then moving up the plant. So I know you and I were talking earlier, we both do similar thing. We prune basically indeterminates up to the first flower cluster, which basically gets foliage off the ground up to maybe a foot, foot and a half, depending on the variety. And you're getting basically protection from grounding diseases that are soil-borne from splashing up. And as a general rule, that's probably what you should do minimally.
As far as pruning. So we want to keep those bottom limbs pruned off so you don't get that disease and everything. What about suckers?
Well, suckers up the plant has been somewhat on the variety. I grow a lot of big beef. I only prune the bottom and I leave it alone. Purple Boy, however, is a smaller fruited variety, and a lot of commercial guys that are growing, as well as home gardeners, I would encourage to prune or take more suckers off, even above the first flower cluster, to increase fruit size. Now, you don't have to do that. You'll have plenty of fruit. They'll just be a little bit on the smaller side. And if that's what you want, doesn't affect eating quality, doesn't affect how the fruit looks necessarily. It's just physical dimension. So play with that. But typically speaking, for most indeterminates, if you can handle the biomass of the plant, you have it in a good cage, you have it in a good trellis, pruning up to the first flower cluster is probably all I would do. It's all I do.
Right.
On any of the varieties.
So we got that out of the way. Now there's a lot of different confusion can happen with varieties. I have grown all the ones we're going to talk about today, with the exception, I don't think I've ever grown Pink Girl, but Better Boy, which probably got more name recognition than any of them out there. What is the benefits, or what is the good characteristics of a Better Boy?
Better Boy is typically a very nice slicing size. It's not big, not overly big. It's not going to win any size contest. Just perfectly nice size to go on a sandwich. Historically known as a very good eating tomato. That's probably the biggest thing. Good yielder. And then for us as a business, I mean, Better Boy is being grown not only all over the U.S., but all over the world. Super highly adaptable and reliable. And I think that's one reason it's such a strong product in the plant raiser business, where you see it a lot at farm centers and big box retailers. It's just incredibly reliable variety from a performance perspective. May never be the best one, but will never be the worst one, and it provides just a really nice, solid, red, round tomato.
Yep. Next one's Big Beef.
So Big Beef is...
I grew Big Beef. That's one of my favorites.
Yeah, Big Beef, particularly Big Beef Plus, which is what you guys market, it's just a really great variety from an eating quality perspective. Super reliable, bigger. Mm-hmm. Most people like its fruit size, and that's one reason I grow it. It's a nice outside the crust, I call it, variety, so that it hangs over.
So what's the difference in Big Beef and Better Boy?
Well, obviously genetically there's a little bit of a difference. It's mainly fruit size.
Okay.
Big Boy has a little bit more of a vertical plant. It's a more aggressive plant.
Okay. So if you are limited on space, Better Boy might make more be a better decision, because it's not going to get quite
as tall. Big Beef will be a little bit better decision if you're a little bit limited in space.
Oh, Big Beef's going to be smaller than Better Boy.
Big Beef's going to be slightly smaller.
Vertically. Oh, okay. All right, so we got to move into the purples and the lemons. Okay, Purple Boy. Talk about it in a minute, because I got to... These next two are at the top of my list as far as taste goes.
Yeah, and Purple Boy is basically a hybrid variety that took some parental lines out of the long-known great eating quality variety, Cherokee Purple,
mm-hmm.
and then it's crossed to some lines out of our program, I believe, for South America, and it's just a very reliable product performance variety. It has root knot nematode resistance, you know, has really good performance in the field, and then eats really, really good. And it looks like a better quality Cherokee Purple. Fruit does, but a little bit smaller.
So it's got a different size to it. It's going to be more uniform and maybe a little bit smaller than the Cherokee
Purple. Yeah, and not have that squatty, heirloomy shape. Yep. It's going to be a more traditionally round shaped.
And it has that dark purple that we all love. You know, and they say the darker the fruit is, the more antioxidants it has in
it. That's true.
It does taste really well. Last week we had, I took a Pink Delicious, I took a Big Beef, and I took a Purple Boy, and I sliced it so they couldn't tell what it was, and I didn't tell them. I walked around the office, let them taste each one of them, and the Purple Boy won.
Yeah, it's my mother's favorite tomato.
Mm-hmm.
Been growing it in our garden for a long time, and it's got a lot of farm stand presence now, particularly in areas where Cherokee Purple is popular.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me, as a alternate to Cherokee Purple, way more productive on a per plant basis.
Mm-hmm. And we can't leave up Mr. Lemon Boy.
Yeah, Lemon Boy is just a very beautiful little tomato. It's not an orange or a yellow. It's that really brilliant lemony yellow, which is unique, actually, in the home garden space.
Yep.
A lot of people love it for eating quality. It's typically a little bit milder flavor, which some people really like. And yellows is a ruler that way. I grow it because anytime you've got bright red tomatoes out there, the contrast of the yellow is really neat. It's very productive. Yeah. It's been around a long time, and home gardeners really love to grow it. And it's super, super reliable. So
we did a little taste test a few years ago.
I remember seeing that.
And it was a blindfolded taste test, which is the only way you can truly do a good taste test. And Lemon Boy won that.
Yeah, it's amazing what people eat, how people eat with their eyes.
Mm-hmm.
You don't recognize it until you are blindfolded and you realize that, hey, maybe I'm eating more with my eyes than I am with my actual taste bud.
So we're gonna kind of couple Big Beef in with the boys. We got Better Boy, we got Big Beef, Purple Boy, Lemon Boy. Now we got we got some work has been done with these varieties here that make them even better as far as disease resistance.
Yeah, the Plus Series, excuse me, and the goal of the Plus Series was to improve upon already proven genetics, but provide things that are limiting to those genetics. So, for instance, tomato spotted wilt virus in the southern tier of the U.S.,
which
basically
is
zone 7 sound
for us,
down,
yep,
is a huge limiting factor to these older genetics. By selecting for varieties that keep all the traditional things you love about those varieties, but having tomato spotted wilt virus resistance really enhances the performance of them in the southern garden for sure.
Yeah.
But it doesn't take away necessarily from performance in a northern garden. Just because it has a resistance doesn't mean that you can't still grow those varieties in a northern garden.
Yeah. Do you grow any determinants in your garden?
I grow. My dad is a longtime celebrity lover.
Okay.
But we were losing about 3/4 of our plants every year to tomato spotted wilt virus.
Okay.
So I quit growing celebrity for that reason until Celebrity Plus came around, and I grow only Celebrity Plus determinants in my garden.
Right.
In eastern North Carolina.
So what, besides the tomato spotted wilt virus, what else do some of these Plus Series, and folks, if you don't know what the Plus Series are, you're going to see more and more of these within the next 2 years transition out of the regular better boar, the big beef, more into the pluses as supplies gets, you know, out there into all the seed companies out there. You're going to see everything transition to the Plus Series.
Yep.
Because they have these tomato spot wilt virus. What else can we look for?
Nematode resistance.
Which is huge for us.
Southern root knot nematode. So Incognita is the actual name, but it's for southern gardeners, again, mainly zone 7 south. If you don't have nematode problems now, you probably will.
Yep.
And the nice thing about the genetic resistance in all these is from a rotational perspective, it's that resistance crashes nematode populations. They think they can feed on them, they can't. They can't reproduce and your population declines. So from a rotational perspective, root knot nematode resistance in your variety is the best option for controlling nematodes.
Right, because we really just don't have much
in
our arsenal for nematodes. And you know, a lot of people have these small spaces out there, and we get this question all the time. They have to plant tomatoes back in the same spot every year.
Yep.
They just can't rotate because they just don't have the land or the spot to do that. So that's where this right here is going to win for everybody.
Yeah, and if you're like you and I, we may have a spring crop of tomatoes, but that fall we may put cucumbers there, squash there.
Right.
If you have nematode resistance in the tomato variety, it really gives you a leg up on growing that fall or rotating the next spring cucurbit crop.
It's actually a way to control nematodes.
It is.
Just like you talked about, you starve them out.
You basically starve them out. They think they can reproduce on that root, but they can't.
Mm-hmm.
So the population just goes from a baseline down.
Yep. All right, so the next we got to talk about is Pink Delicious. Now, we've been carrying Pink Delicious for a couple of years now. Man, this is a good tomato right here. But I'm going to tell you, and you probably would agree with me, I think where the juice is with this variety right here is for roadside stands.
Yeah.
Or if you're working farmers markets and everything, this variety here has got that heirloom look to it. It's got that heirloom taste to it somewhat for a pink tomato. But it's got that look, makes that big old gnarly, pretty tomato, but it's got disease resistance.
Yeah,
you can actually grow it.
It's got vigor too.
Yep.
From hybrid vigor.
Mm-hmm.
But really, really nice product. And it's a part of a trend you're going to see among a lot of breeding companies of taking heirloom looking genetics and hybridizing them in a way that increases yield potential, disease resistance, things like that, that really don't take away from what you love about them being heirloomy, the fascinated look to the interior, the really high aromatics that you smell when you eat them, all that's there. It's just in a hybrid form that fills in some of the gaps that you don't get with true heirloom.
There again, helps you be successful grow this variety you want to grow. I can't grow a true heirloom here. I just can't do it.
Well, we struggle in eastern North Carolina
So these right here, I can grow, and I grow some every year. I got some planted out there this year in my garden. Now this is not the only tomato I grow, but it is part of the ones I grow. I like to grow a few of them. These Pink Delicious are not the most productive plants you're going to have in the garden, but it's definitely going to give you an unusual, different type of tomato out there.
Yeah, it's just like, almost a lot of way like Lemon Boy. It's just something that's different that,
right.
From a culinary perspective, it's unique, and you like to show it off to people. Pink Delicious can be huge. I mean, they can be really, really big fruit.
Yep.
And one of the biggest things probably from an heirloom is heirloom perspective is it does not crack. It really has great crack resistance both on the stem end and the blossom end. And that's really why the guys that are using it on small commercial scales love it, is because it has post-harvest stability in terms of going to a stand and being able to last 2, 3, 4 days after you've harvested it. It really is an improvement over the Brandywines of the world or the German Johnsons of the world.
So if you're doing farmers markets roadside stands, you got to check out that variety right there. I think it's a.
We've never trialed it with anyone that's not turned around and purchased it.
Right.
It's really a good variety.
Pink Girl. Now, I'm not really familiar with Pink Girl, so I'll let you fill us in on that one.
Older variety, pretty standard indeterminate pink, more of a traditional looking tomato.
It is a determinate?
It's an indeterminate, I misspoke. Yeah. It's an indeterminate variety, but it's more of a traditional shape. It basically looks a lot like a traditional beefsteak, but pink.
Okay.
It's if you want a traditional looking pink tomato, that was what you'd grow.
Okay. All right, and this is going to be the last of our indeterminates, but I think this is off the chain, Sun Sugar.
Yeah, it's been around a while, and Sun Sugar is a orange, or some people, it's not a yellow, it's not an orange, it's in between, but super high bricks, phenomenal eating quality.
Yeah. If you ever grow that one, you're going to grow it every year after year after
year. Yeah, it's super solid. I grow more plants of Sun Sugar in my garden than I do any other tomato. You do want to prune it pretty aggressively, because like a lot of your indeterminate cherries or grape tomato varieties, they can be a little on the wild side.
Yeah.
So you do want to be more aggressive with them, but not to the point maybe where you take a lot of the yield off.
Mm-hmm.
But you do need to be a little more aggressive with pruning those, just to keep them more in check.
A couple of plants is plenty for the average home gardener.
Super productive.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to move into determinants just for a couple of varieties here. We're going to switch over. Indeterminants we were talking about, now we're going to talk about determinants. Celebrity first.
Yes.
You said Celebrity is one of your favorite varieties.
It's a high acid tomato. It's probably, at one time, we estimated it was the most widely planted variety in the world in terms of a hybrid, because it was being grown commercially all over the world. But it's my dad's favorite tomato, has been for a long time because of the high acid. And people know it by eyesight.
So Celebrity Plus is going to have tomato spotted wilt virus?
Correct. So one of the big weaknesses of Celebrity, and I never knew why, and I probably never will know why, but it seemed to really attract thrips. And in my garden in North Carolina, we always had more spotted wilt on Celebrity than other varieties. Couldn't explain it, don't know why now, but adding the resistance to spotted wilt to that genetics has really made Celebrity much, much more viable for home gardeners now than it was before, particularly if you're in Zone 7 or South.
Right. And we got another one called Florida 91 that's a very popular variety with us.
Yeah, and it comes out of a University of Florida background, and it is a true hot set. There's some genetics that came out of University of Florida, I think it was in the 80s or 90s, that were selected for ability to set in higher nighttime temperatures. People think hot set has got to do with the daytime temperature, but it really doesn't. It's more nighttime temperatures where you lose blooms. So Florida 91 is out of that background. It's one of the only true hot sets still in the commercial space. So for fall production.
That's what I was going to say, yeah.
Transplanting more in June or July for fall production.
Yeah.
And one of the weird things is you don't have spotted wilt as much in the fall as you do in the spring. It's got to do with the thrip population dynamics and all that stuff. But you can get away with growing a non-spotted wilt resistant variety in Georgia or in North Carolina in the fall when you can't in the spring.
Right. So the Florida 91 is a great fall variety.
Right.
It's not the biggest tomato, but it's just would you say a medium size?
It's a medium size. That one does need to be pruned quite a bit. It's got the genetics are more out of the University of Florida than they are out of our genetics. So there is a predicate to need to prune that one probably up to the fork or the first flower cluster.
Okay.
And it can take it because it's got a fairly large plant.
Okay.
Great foliar cover, which you have to have in the fall from a sun scalding perspective.
Yep.
And typically considered one of the more high acid. Anything with a hot set background tends to have pretty high acid. At least that's historically what has been said.
Now, we got a variety that I'm growing, I'm trialing in my garden this year. It's one we actually don't sell. We may sell it in the future that I'm intrigued about. It's called Myrtle.
Yeah, Myrtle is one that comes out of our background that's spotted wilt resistant and nematode resistant. And for Southern gardeners, it's got that as a really nice
and
base
a determinant.
Trait. And it's a determinant, and it does not need to be pruned. We do not want it pruned.
Leave it alone.
Great. I suspect what you'll see is a great cage tomato. So people that do traditional tomato cages, fill it up nicely, won't go out of it, won't go crazy. Very traditional shape, very traditional type tomato from an eating quality perspective, that sort of thing. Very good, solid variety.
Great deal. Man, we have touched on some tomatoes, haven't we?
Yeah.
Can you taste the tomato sandwich right now? Do you love tomato sandwich?
As long as you don't put mayonnaise on it. I think that's for you,
really?
And I, that's for you and I part ways.
You don't like mayonnaise?
Can't stand it.
Oh, man. Gotta have mayonnaise. How do you eat a tomato sandwich without mayonnaise?
Balsamic vinegar.
Really?
Yep. With the olive oil, balsamic vinegar.
They're going to kick you out of North Carolina for making a statement.
No.
Balsamic vinegar. Man, that's heathenness right there.
Oh, that's good stuff.
Got to have that Duke's mayonnaise.
I'll bring you over to the dark side.
All right, eventually. I'll have to try it and see. So we got a garden spotlight this week, folks. Is Brian Atkinson, Zone 8, O'Brien, Florida. Brian sent us in some pictures there.
Dang, what is that? That's radishes.
Like radishes. And look at this. Look at his cages right here.
Love his cages.
Yep. I need to do more of those right there. These are pretty neat.
The arch cages are great for beans particularly.
Yep. And, of course, Brian had to grow onions. Look at that. You know, everybody has made a good onion crop this year, seems like.
I admire anyone who can grow onions because I can't.
Really?
You can't do it.
We are highly successful growing them down here. We got our tricks that I tell everybody, you know, if you follow our rules, you can grow onions. And that looks like some beans right there.
Mm-hmm.
Nice beans. And cultivated. And here's his tomatoes. He's got them caged up real nice. Got some pretty good sized tomatoes going on there, Brian. Brian and Zone 8 O'Brien. I thought he would have been in Zone 9, but O'Brien, Florida. Thank you, Brian.
Might be in the panhandle.
Yep. Corn, pole beans, watermelons, pumpkins, radishes, onions, garlic, tomatoes. He's growing it all there. All right, folks, we still have sweet potato slips available. And you and I talked about it a little bit earlier. People, if you get your sweet potato slips in and they look a little bit ragged, it's natural. I tell people, I say, you could lay them out there in the sun for a week and still go back and plant them and they'll come back out.
North Carolina is one of the largest sweet producing states in the country. I've got family that grows sweet potatoes. And, you know, I chuckled when you know, were talking about people talking about how rough they looked. They looked good to me. I mean, I've planted a lot of sweet potatoes over the year on a setter.
Yeah.
And you're amazed at what you put in the ground, and a week later, you're amazed at what's there.
Yeah, yeah.
They're incredibly resilient.
Yeah, don't sweat. Your sweet potatoes be a little wilted or a little yellow. That's normal to bounce back out in no time. Tomato plugs, we're about ready to wind it down on tomato plugs. We're looking to see what our inventory is. So if we've still got tomatoes, they'll be online. If not, then you'll know we're with this. About time.
Good looking plant, though.
Yeah, about time for us to switch off the tomato plants. We're working on something that we may bring. I shouldn't even bring it up. Turmeric. We're working on a little project with that. You may see turmeric on our site within the next little
bit. Really interesting.
It is. And you know, it has a lot of health benefits,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep. All right, so on the old goat drawing, there's an old goat figurine here on the shelf here somewhere.
And tough to find today.
And if you found it last week, we put you in a drawing, and we're going to draw out your name, and you're going to get a special gift, and I'll let you do the drawing.
All right, let's see what we got. Margie Lane.
Margie Lane. Margie Lane, you are the winner of the old goat. If you know where the old goat's at, put it in the comments below, and we'll put you in the drawing for next week. On the old goat drawing. Or just send us your address, shipping address to CustServe, and we'll get you something sent out there. So we got a little something special we've been doing for the last little bit here. Monterey is sponsoring a giveaway at the end of our show. And we'll talk about these here just a little bit, because you're probably familiar with a couple of these products.
Oh yeah, I used to put out yellow sticky traps.
Yep. When
I was in,
you know, they are coming back around somewhat for the home gardener. You know, used for control and for monitoring.
Monitoring for what we were using them for,
Yep. So you can use these right out here, the yellow sticky traps, and then we've got the Monterey Complete Disease Control. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with this product here?
I'm familiar with it, yep.
Serenade?
Oh yeah, Serenade's.
This is a cousin of Serenade.
Okay, yeah.
Yep. So this is a biological right here, a biological disease control. And of course, we've got horticulture oil that's going to work great on those soft body insects right there.
Aphids in particular.
And the good thing about this one is it won't burn. So this is a refined oil that you can spray all during the day right here. It's a good one right there.
It's a great maintenance chemistry.
Yeah, and it's safe.
Yeah, you can use it multiple times.
Right. And of course, we got some fish guano. You got to have a little fertilizer out there for those plants. Monterey sponsoring this giveaway right here. And we got these four products right here that we're giving away every week. And last week, it was they had to put in their comments how they like their okra fried.
Okay.
And they said fried. I said how they like their okra prepared. They liked it fried. And the winner was Lucinda. Am I saying that right? Lucinda?
Lucinda.
Lucinda Borkin. Lucinda Borkin, you was the winner last week. So send us your shipping address to CustServeHossTools.com, and we'll get this great Monterey giveaway out to you.
Good
now,
start.
The question is, what are we going to do for next week's winner of the Monterey giveaway? We got to have
what
in
question?
The comments below what question. This is one I think. What indeterminate tomato variety is your favorite?
Hmm.
Put that in the comment below, and that'll put you in the drawing for this giveaway right here.
Cool.
Yep. Well, thank you, Peter. I think we touched on indeterminates a little bit today.
Yeah.
Don't get carried away by seeing some of this stuff on YouTube out there. Make sure you got good sound advice as you got today on your pruning and your sucker and your indeterminates, and I think you'll be successful.
Agree.
Yep. Thank you, Peter.
Thank you, sir.
Yep. All right, y'all have a good one. Now it's time for you to get outside and get dirty.